Chapter 38. I rested for 2 more days and drove off after a quick goodbye with Dr. Briggs. I thought she might actually have had a tear in her eye, but whether that was because of the dusty nature of the hospital or because she was losing her favorite experiment, I didn't know. She muttered something about how there'd now be a lot more medical supplies for everyone else, and then I was on the road. The car was pretty much as I had abandoned it, with the exception of a 50-caliber hole in the door. As it turned out, there were 2 layers of Kevlar in the door paneling, and the second had stopped the round. That was good to know, although I doubted the window could have done the same. Jacobs had done a great job provisioning the car, and I think I actually drove off with more ammo and supplies than I had arrived with. As I almost got killed twice in order to get it, including nearly getting eaten alive by a giant Geno freak, I'm not sure how great a deal it was. But I ended up alive, reprovisioned, and on my way, so I was as happy as a man who didn't know who he was could be. The journey north started out better than most of my other recent excursions, and I was all the way to the outskirts of Birmingham in less than an hour, having only had to run 2 roadblocks where the defenders made, at best, a half-hearted attempt at stopping me. It wasn't even worth giving them the finger for trying. Don't get me wrong, I totally did give them the finger, but their efforts barely justified it. The Geiger counter started going crazy as I approached Birmingham. It had obviously taken a hit or two. So I took the bypass around the city, running another 2 roadblocks along the way. Perhaps the folks in northern Alabama didn't have as much ammo as their cousins in the south. Perhaps they hadn't been fed as well. Ignorance and apathy, I didn't know, and I didn't care. I was just happy to blow on by the barricades without being in a whole lot of danger. And thanks to their involvement in my life, I was able to improve my skills in driving on grass to the point where I rarely lost control anymore. My car acquired a few more bullet holes in the outer sheet metal. But in general, I was rather pleased with my progress. After a couple of hours on I-59 and a crossover onto I-24, I was rapidly approaching Chattanooga when things returned to normal, which is to say, shitty. I had just gotten my first sight of the Tennessee River when I came to the bridge that wasn't. Where the bridge used to cross Lookout Creek, there was now nothing except the river, flowing quickly under the 80-foot-wide gap. Worse, as I got out of the car to look at it, the Geiger counter began climbing. It was too early to know for sure if Chattanooga had been wasted, but that was looking like the way to bet. Still, I hadn't seen Boudreaux yet or any indications of his passage, so I went back to the last big intersection and cut over to Highway 41, which roughly paralleled I-24 into the city. I made it a little further past Lookout Creek on the other road, but then the Geiger counter went crazy. I was within a couple of miles of my destination, but unless I wanted to glow at night, which I really didn't, I was going to have to try something else. Boudreaux had an army of helpers. I knew he wouldn't have risked going any further either, so I had to have missed him somewhere along the way. Either he went down a different road, or he got wiped out, which I felt was less likely. If I'd made it this far on my own, he probably had too. With that in mind, I turned back south, climbing up Lookout Mountain. Maybe a view from above would help me figure out what to do. Unfortunately, the mountain was heavily wooded, and there wasn't any way to look back into the city. On the good side, though, the radiation levels fell quickly as I headed south, so at least I had that going for me. I drove along, continuing south along the spine of the small ridge, not really sure what I wanted to do. I needed to stop and think, but the area was well populated, and I didn't want to give anyone a shot at me in the open. I would need gas soon, as it was reaching a critical level, but I'd seen plenty of people since I reached the outskirts of Chattanooga and didn't really want to stop. Although none of them appeared ready or willing to accost me, I wasn't really in a trusting mood. There were a number who held out hands to me as I breezed through some of the intersections, but I avoided them and kept going. I made it about 2 miles farther, then ran into a roadblock at the entrance to Covenant College. Although the three men at the barricade were all armed with rifles, they were slung, and none of them seemed to be in a hurry to shoot me. So I allowed one of them to approach the car without trying to back up and make a getaway. He made a motion for me to roll down my window. "Can't!" I yelled through it as best I could. The armored window blocked sound almost as well as bullets. "It's broken!" The man scanned the inside of my car. Happily, I'd put all the extra stores in the trunk out of sight. All he could see was that I had a rifle and a pistol. I could see a calculating look in his eyes. While the weapons might have been enough for him to try to take them, if he did so, he had to know I might be able to use them. And he ran the risk of becoming dead rather than better armed. Common sense won out over avarice in the end.
"You need to turn back," the man said finally. "There's a war zone up ahead."
"A war zone?" I asked.
"Yeah. Some folks from Florida thought they could come through and take what they wanted from us, but we called up the militia. We got them trapped up at the college."
Something must have crossed my eyes because the man stepped back away from the car and moved to the front of the car.
"Where are you from, anyway?" he asked.
"Clanton, Alabama," I replied.
I'd removed the tags from the car on the thought that no one really needed to know where I was from or how far from home I was.
"And what you doing up here?" he asked. "That seems a long way from home, with gas so scarce."
"I hadn't heard from my grandma, and my mom asked if I could go take a look. She lived in Chattanooga."
"Well, if she was downtown, she's dead," the man replied. "Chattanooga took one right on top of the city diner. You won't be getting any more cake from there, not for a long while."
"Well, shit," I said, trying to look distraught. "My mom's gonna be sad."
I could tell by the look on the man's face he wasn't buying it. His rifle slid off his shoulder and down into his hands. That was my cue I'd overstayed my welcome.
"Okay, well, I have to get back to my mom," I said.
I put the car into reverse and started backing away.
"Stop,"
the sentry ordered. Avarice and distrust had won out in the end, apparently. I spun the car around, and he fired, putting a chip in the center of my back window. The other two fired as well, and I could hear impacts on the car as I gunned the motor, although none appeared to penetrate or hit anything vital. They hit the car another couple of times before I made it to the next corner and out of sight. I checked the gauges, and everything appeared fine, but the handling was off slightly. The little yellow tire light illuminated right at the same time I figured out what had happened. They'd hit at least one of my tires. That put me into a quandary. Did I get as far as I could before trying to change the tire? The men at the barricade probably knew they'd hit my tire and might come looking to catch me when I stopped. Or, since it seemed like there was a decent chance I'd just found Boudreaux's group, did I stop and try to link up with him? I shook my head as I contemplated. There really wasn't anywhere to go to stop along the way to fix the tire. And I'd come all this way to meet Boudreaux. I made a decision and pulled off down Frontier Bluff Road, a side street which ran off to the left, further into the forest and slightly down the backside of the hill. There were a few houses buried deep in the woods that it serviced. I passed them slowly and coasted to a stop a little further up the road and got out of the car. I had to know if it was Boudreaux, and I had to know now, even if the guys at the barricade sent someone out looking for me. Sometimes you just have to do what feels right in this fallen world.